Bonjour tout le monde, je suis une dépendante, je m'appelle Claudine.
Good morning everybody, I'm an addict and my name is Claudine. 45 minutes, minus 10 and 20 and 20. Okay, in other words, I should finish at 20 past. Before I start, I'd like to thank your organizing committee, the organizing committee, after 400 or 500 names, maybe more, of addicts' names that could have come up, and shared a message on a theme as unmanageability in recovery. That their group awareness or their discernment made them call me and ask me to come and share at a convention, a regional convention, a convention at home. That's a great gift.
For someone who spent, well, I wouldn't say part of her life, but her whole life, even in recovery, giving gifts. And being so happy to see the people who got the gift. But getting a gift, that was another story. I'm just beginning. To be able to allow myself to take what I have coming to me, what is mine, what belongs to me, without having to hurry up and quickly give you back what you've just given me, whether it's a compliment or a gift or a hug, or if you just say that I like you or I love you, I don't have to hurry up and say, oh yeah, I love you too. I haven't been able to do that for very long. I started it progressively by beginning to love myself a little bit. I was able to do this just bit by bit. You know, it's not so easy to talk for 45 minutes about unmanageability and recovery, because the way I see it, I can't really talk to you about the first step, which is sort of disease overall, without talking about the other 11 steps. Nor can I talk to you about the second part of the first step in just one area of my life. Because in recovery, unmanageability of my life isn't something that happens in the big areas. It's not in the big things where I find that my life has become unmanageable. Often it's in the little things. With the fourth steps that I made, I mean, I don't do my 10th step every day, as has been suggested to me. Since I don't maintain myself, I have to do spring cleaning 3 times in 5 years. So I've done a fourth step 3 times. I'm the kind of person who really gives a big spurt, and then I just kind of settle back. I can't talk to you about unmanageability without talking about relationships. Today, I realize that my shortcomings are emotional, and the addiction, the substance addiction that followed. Well, before the substance addiction, there was an emotional addiction. For those of you who weren't here before, I heard what Sylvia was saying about relationships this morning. And she really got me started. She opened the door for me. She opened my door. And I let Sylvia's power just flow into me. And she came into me.
What a
Where I tend to lose control of my life, most obviously, is in human relationships. You know, there are emotional relationships, there are human relationships, there are love relationships. There are also sexual relationships. And above all, there's a relation with God as I understand Him. Which means that what follows is a relationship with a little girl inside of me, my inner child. The little girl has been crying for the last couple of days. She's been crying for 33 years now. But you can't tell. Now, in that relationship with my inner child, even if I admit my powerlessness over it, my past, my experience, my childhood, that's where it all happened. But I still lose control over my life. Without even lapsing into self-pity or feeling like a victim, I still have a lot of pain when I look at my past. I heard what Lawrence was talking about yesterday, talking about guilt and shame. And I really identified with that. I'd just like to take a few minutes to tell you, if you're new or not even that new, and you who believed in me so that I could be able to come up here and tell you this, tell you a little bit about where I come from. Well, I can tell you that dope got me into prison, into prostitution, into stabbing myself in the arms and eating from garbage bins, and into psychiatry 3 different times, paranoid psychosis. I saw spiders on myself, I saw rats all around the house, I thought I was crazy. That's what dope did to me. But things happened before I got there. You know, in the program, it says that only an addict can understand and help another addict. Talk about the therapeutic relationship of addicts helping addicts. That's really something remarkable. And with all the sharing that I've heard since I've gotten to this convention, I know I'm not alone. There are people who are humble enough, even if they haven't done their fifth step, they're humble enough to tell you who they really are. Who they really are. Not what they look like, what they seem to be, or who they'd like to be, but who they really are. To give you the hope and the feeling that you're not alone when you've gone through something. You're not the only one who's gone through it. Shame and guilt, those are things I know only too well. And I'm just at the beginning. When I say just at the beginning, I mean I have just over 5 years of clean time, recovery time. They're just beginning to fade. A lack of self-esteem is just beginning to whittle away. And what I was missing, that self-esteem, is just beginning to drift in. Because I'm a survivor. You know, in the readings it says, I will live and enjoy life without using. And I realized not too long ago, when I heard people talking about themselves and was talking about them, I was living without using, but I wasn't enjoying life without using. because I had all kinds of pain, even though I'd done the four steps, even with the honesty that I had, even with the depth that I had. But I hadn't gone down to the very depths of my suffering, and I was still so afraid to go there. But it's as though the power to choose, to say, yeah, okay, but if I don't choose the program, I'm going to die. If I don't choose the steps and the way of God and to God and a higher power, bigger than myself, I'm not going to go get stoned again. I'm just going to commit suicide. So with the power to choose that Narcotics Anonymous has given me, I decided to choose the road less traveled, the road of the 12 steps of NA. Because there's one thing I believe in today. I can't be full of disease and in the program. Either I am in the throes of my disease or I'm in this program. Well, and if I'm in my disease, I know it. And when I'm in the program, I know it. I feel it. Being able to feel something I never wanted to feel. That little girl who was so hurt, who was abandoned, who was terrified, stifled, abused sexually, emotionally, mentally, threatened by fear, by authority. That little girl is starting to cry out, I want to live, I want to enjoy life. I don't want to be stoned. I don't want you to freeze me out, even if it's not with dope anymore. I don't want you to dull me. So as I understood this, yes, I'm losing control over my life. I am losing control over my inner life. Because my outside life is going pretty well. I don't have too much trouble. I mean, my temperament and my nature are that I just go in there. I march ahead. I was afraid of succeeding for a while, but I'm not afraid of it anymore. I'm talking about outside success. To sign a $25,000 contract in my job, no problem, I can do it. But to sign a 25-year contract with myself, without abandoning myself, being nice to myself, respecting myself, respecting the values, the real values, Claudine's real values, not the values that were given to me and to get love, I'd say, yeah, okay, I'll like those values too. That's not always an easy thing to do. That's not always an easy thing to say yes to myself. And sometimes to say no to you with love. I think so, but what do you think? What you think is up to you. That's not the best way to talk today. I think that you have to have been hurt so deeply inside in your soul and in the very heart of your heart. To be able to have a relationship with another human being without injuring them in their heart of hearts, in their soul, and in their beings. When you talk to that person. At work, in my friendships, in all the areas of my life, everybody is an addict. Thank you. Addicts are very sensitive people, very vulnerable people. And just like me, they feel like they're not understood, they're not the same. Maybe they're nuts. That's what they feel. Because they've been hurt. Because they've been rejected. Because they weren't respected. Because nobody gave them a welcome. I'm not going to say that addiction is a factor of what kind of upbringing you had or what kind of upbringing I had. I'm the fourth of a family of five kids, and some of the kids have never used drugs in our family. And they're living a relatively normal, realistic life with ups and downs. They didn't have to stick needles into their arms. They didn't have to wake up in the morning. And their first thought was, what can I do to get my fix today? So I think that disease was maybe it was born with me, maybe after, maybe before. I stopped looking for why. At one point, we were given a suggestion not to share for the month and a half that was going to follow when they announced the speakers. They asked us not to share until the convention. So I respected that. I refused to share. And I kind of analyzed, what was unmanageability? What did it mean to me? So what do you do? How do you begin to manage again? The only answer I could come up with was second step, third step. In the first years of my recovery, I was losing control of my life without using, especially in relationships, because that's where I told you I had the most difficulty, the most shortcomings. It's hard for me to get involved with another human being. I'm afraid of not being loved and liked. I'm afraid of not being understood. Before, I was thanking people. Who saw me come in, or who saw me on my way? Frantic, frightened, frantic and frightened, and I thank those people for having to continue to love me, even though I kept on crying in front of them. That's the first time, the first year that I've been able to cry. That was the first time where, instead of surviving, I'm able to live. I'm going to be 34. And to me, the marvelous, the miracle of NA, the miracle about which they say, you know, don't go until you get that miracle, until it happens to you. That's the miracle that happened to me this year. Now, I do find it marvelous to have been freed from using. But that wasn't a miracle for me. The miracle is that I was able to turn to God and nothing happened. No, the miracle was that I was able to have stopped using with the help of a higher power and the fellowship. And all of the tools that the fellowship gives us, that they suggest to us. But that's just the tip of the iceberg, because for me, the disease of addiction for today isn't in drugs anymore, but I'm still in the meeting room. I'm an addict, but I'm an emotional addict. And I work in helping recovering addicts. And recently, I was writing something about emotional dependence, emotional addiction, when I was preparing something. And I start to laugh. I looked at that and I said, you know, it says emotional addiction. Well, the definition is easy. It's wanting to give somebody something that you don't even have. To someone who doesn't, you want to give it, you don't want to give what you don't even have to someone who doesn't even want it. Well, how can you possibly hope to give love and warmth and joy and enthusiasm and freedom, not possessiveness, freedom, when you can't even give it to yourself? How could you be involved with another human being, a real involvement, a real relationship, not just a phallic relationship, you know? It doesn't do it for me, at least not anymore. Sticking myself in the arm with a needle, forget it. Sometimes the word phallic is hard to understand, but, you know, that's what I mean. It just, you know, that doesn't do it for me. So when I talk about the miracle, I mean, after 5 years, I'm coming out of my denial. After 5 years of living in relationships, repeated failures, these relationships were, knowing what I don't want anymore, and beginning to find out what it is that I do want. I go to look for some guy that I can save. Some guy with problems. Some guy who has trouble loving. Some guy who won't allow himself to be loved. Some guy who can't be warm. A guy who has no self-respect. A guy who needs me to make him happy. I'm, in other words, going after people who are like me. Well, I think I'm a therapist. I know all kinds of things. And this is the right guy for me. Not bad, eh? Now, 3 years ago, I'd see someone in a meeting room or a convention, wouldn't know their name even, but I'd already imagined being married to them with two kids, one looking like me, one looking like him. Maybe that guy hadn't even noticed me. So I've improved. So, you know, at one point I met someone, we talked. 2 days later, he moved in. You know, obviously, I don't have much control. You know? No, we're not going to go move in together. You're going to come to move in to my place. You think you're going to give me any opportunity to kick me out? Hey, here, you like this? Do I like NA or do I like NA? I'm starting to get hot up here. This is a gift that my brother got for me. It's a gift that my brother got me. My brother, who saw me at the absolute bottom. I was such an animal 5 years ago. He said, Claudine, do you want me to shoot you in the head to just deliver you from your suffering? If you want me to, I will. And my 5-year cake, he said, give me your jacket, I'm gonna put something on it. And I went to pick up my jacket, and this is what he did for me. And I tried it on, I wore it home, and I hung it up, and inside it says, congratulations, and there's a cake with 5 candles, and it says, I love you. He was ready to help me and free me from my suffering 5 years ago by killing me, because he just couldn't stand seeing me. All my family members were like that anyways. They couldn't take it, the powerlessness that they felt. So anyhow, getting back to where I was, I'm not going to give you the chance to kick me out of my place. Getting back to that. No moving in for us. I had fucking good reasons to get a whole material set up, you know, when I started the program. Firstly, I always believed in God. I was in prison. I had a big poster of Jesus in my cell. I went to the chapel every Sunday. Didn't get me out of prison any faster, but I believed in something. I had to, because some winters, you know, when I was at my lowest depths of prostitution, you know, at the time, I would do taxi drivers for $10 because I was $10 short for my next shot. That was how much I hated myself, and I was sure that you would never, ever love me. And I pray to God for a car to stop because I was so cold. I wanted to warm up my feet because I didn't have socks. And I was in high-heeled shoes in December, standing on a street corner. And when it hurt inside, because someone was saying, Claudine, you're going to have to eat, and I'd been shooting up for 4 days, I went looking in the garbage cans at metro stations, looking for food. That wasn't that long ago, just 7 years ago. And when I came into the program, I said, I'm never going to feel lack of anything. I'm no longer ever going to be hungry or cold. When you let me, I mean, if you, when you read to me, if you're prepared to make the effort to take what we have to give you, you're prepared to take certain steps, I said yes right away. And I didn't relapse. I'm saying this with pride, but also with humility, because there are people like me and the other people here who've been done what I've done, and it takes people like us to greet the new people coming in, because they may not have had the support or the courage to make the effort.
For the conclusion of this presentation, please turn your cassette over and depress the play button. Do not rewind your cassette.
First thing I'm going to work on is the material side. And you could see, boy, could you see I was recovered. Just take one look, you could tell. You can still see. Still shows. Except today, it's because I want it. It's not to prove anything to you. Today, I'm realizing dreams in all areas of my life, material, spiritual, physical, inside. But the first 2 years, I went back to school. You know, hitchhiking, knapsack on the back. I stayed at my parents' house. I was sleeping on a foam mattress. My sister just got a divorce. She's an addict in the program. And, you know, we'd be sleeping in the same room. And, you know, she'd check this out and say, you know, oh, I need some hash or whatever. I mean, you know. Anyhow, she's got a 3-year cake this year. She used to say, ah, check it out, a junkie like me. And we slept where our parents had made room for us. You know, two fucked up kids coming back home. I went to university to do an addiction certificate because I figured, geez, with all my experience, the only CV that's going to be worthwhile is the suffering one. That's all I need on my resume. It's all on my resume will be good for. And I said, okay, I'm there. I can understand you. If you've been battered, I understand you. I can help you. If you've been stoned all your life, I can help you. If you've been shooting up, I can help. I understand. I can help you. If you're bisexual and you're still looking for yourself, I can understand you. I can help you. If you're a woman who's been in jail, I can understand you. I can help you. If you've been in psychiatry, I've been there. I can help you. Well, I had quite a doctorate of life, didn't I? No problem getting a job. So I went to school, and I went to finish off. Well, I went to do some more anyhow, more work, more study. And I worked in treatment centers. At first I found it hard to be able to start at the bottom of the scale. Often I would just lose control. I was short of cash and I wanted it, because my priority after not shooting up anymore was to get money. I didn't want to be short of anything. I wanted to be able to move away from my parents' house, not because I didn't like them, but we just don't have the same lifestyle. I had no emotional relationships for the first 8 months of my recovery. Not because I was following your suggestions, because I weighed 211 pounds. I looked like Elvis when I came in. I took about 125 pills a day, 30, 35 in the morning, just to stop the shakes, and then I'd get stoned. So I wasn't exactly the most attractive person that anyone was going to want to get involved with, was I? So I got involved with my studies. And I keep going to meetings. The second year, I worked. I went to school. I went to meetings. And I got my own place. I bought my first car. It's amazing. You know, after 5 years, I bought my first car. That means that I've already bought a second car, right? For more money, too. I want to tell you. I've had a dream since I was little. Because I'd hang out with gangs, you know, they'd use, they'd steal, you know, hot cars, hot stuff, hot sports car. And I was able to drive stolen sports cars, you know, for a day or two or a week or two. They weren't mine. And one of my dreams was to have a Corvette. I wanted a Corvette convertible. Blasting music, sun in my face, straight. I wanted to heal the world. What a wonderful world. With real Ray-Bans. A month and a half ago, I bought myself a convertible Corvette. ANA, that'll do it for you. Now, there was a time where I was afraid to say this because I thought, oh my God, everyone's going to just think I'm nuts. I talked about it with members who have more time than me, and they said, Claudine, talk about it. You'll give people hope if they just walk in and they're like you. You know, they came in with basically only half a bag full of possessions. My first meetings, I walked in with I weighed 200 plus, and, you know, the elastics were off of my, the elastics were popping off of my gloves, so can you imagine that? My pantyhose were just falling down. I couldn't pull them up. I was so fat. So does that give you the idea that if I even took off my pants, would you want to screw me? So to be able to turn around and say, I find myself beautiful inside, well... I've got 10 minutes left. There's so many things I'd like to say. Losing control, things becoming unmanageable. The only thing that could make it possible if we want something, and of course we talk about wanting in our spiritual principles. If I want to be honest, if I want to open up my mind to the members around me, to my real friends, of whom there aren't that many, to my sponsor, who I'm starting a nice relationship with. I have a new sponsor, and I think it's great. I have sponsees who I adore. I don't always call my sponsor, but I just find it marvelous. I mean, the last time that we were in touch that we spoke on the phone, she really must be getting to know me. She said, she's never going to call, so I better call her. So she called me. She knew that I was down because she'd heard about it. And it was kind of like I made sure that she did hear about it. And that's honesty for you. She called me at 1 o'clock in the morning. She woke me up. Well, woke me up. I mean, I wasn't really sleeping very well since I was so down. And she took the trouble of listening to me and hearing me talk until after 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, when I hung up, before I hung up, my sponsor said to me, You've helped me so much. Imagine that. I said, "France, I love you," and I hung up the phone and I cried for half an hour. That she didn't know, by the way. Where do these people come from? People who believe in you enough? Who can feel you in your pain? Who know that you're becoming a person, a tremendous, extraordinary person through that suffering? And they're not just there to give you your cake and say a couple of pretty compliments to you a couple of times a year. They're there all the way through. The therapeutic value of an addict helping an addict is without parallel day and night. The word unconditional, that brings you back to your sanity when you've lost control of your life. When things became unmanageable for me, because I suffer, because of things that I haven't yet settled and that I've reasoned are coming back up, and I've got to live through them. I have to express them. Pain, anger, there's still some left, guilt, shame. The regret of having made such a failure out of my life. Together with the hope of starting a new life. And everything is still possible. Becoming aware of the fact that even if it hurts to start to love myself and to respect myself more and more. I mean, over a year ago, I said, I choose myself, and boy, what a bullshit artist I am. I just broken up in a relationship right now. I'm in a breaking up phase, and it hurts me. It hurts not because I'm so crazy about the guy. It hurts because I see that once again I was in that denial to be with someone who couldn't love himself enough to be able to receive everything that I could give to him and what I wanted to give to him. Because today I can give myself things. I can take myself out to supper at a restaurant. I can stop on the way home and pick flowers up for myself and put them on my kitchen table. I can rent a video for myself and watch it happily at home. I can go to hospitals and prisons and help dependents suffering, and they're still in there. I can do things out of love for myself and out of respect for myself. But it hurts me. See, that I had told myself that this was the right guy for me. Doesn't mean that he doesn't have qualities. But who am I to put myself back to 2 years clean time? I've got 5 years. I've made efforts. I've done certain things. I've come a certain way. Doesn't mean you're better or worse or more or less. It just means you're not ready the way I am to do certain things. And I'm convinced that his higher power will ensure that he is going to grow. And if I love myself, and if I love him, I'll hope for the best for him. I'll wish him all the best, and that's what I'm going through now. So I'm not in a heartbreak situation where you're going to have to feed me, spoon feed me, because I can't eat. Because I decided to stay upright and standing, despite the adversities of life. By having God in my life, that's what it's done for me. It's very unsettling to have spirituality at first. You know, it makes you cry when you're suffering. It makes you forgive, too. If not, I'm the one who's stuck with the resentment and the anger, and what am I supposed to do with it? I didn't lose control of my life. He waited for me to make the decision that perhaps this would be the best solution to just to break up, you know. He couldn't make that decision. But he felt bad. Now, I'm getting pretty good at feeling things, so I felt what he was feeling. So I said, "Claudine, if you're going to be honest with yourself, you're capable of being honest with him too. He's not the person you need in your life right now. I don't want to be the woman who loves too much, you know, the emotional addict. Addicted to love, who gives and gives and gives and gives and gives, with a capital L for love. To be able to come back to her a few months later to say, after all I've done for you, my dear, you have not yet become what I expected you to be, you damn asshole. Changed. I'm changing right now, profoundly. Doesn't mean that I'm not going to let you live. Doesn't mean that because we're not in the same place, I'm not going to take you the way you are and love you the way you are. It might mean that I'm not going to invite you to suffer. You might not be one of my major relationships in my life. But I'll try to help you keep up hope and help you and understand you. I don't want my inner life to become unmanageable anymore. Let me tell you the truth. Why? Why? Because nothing gets me high anymore. When I lose management of my inner life, it's because I'm full of frustration. Why? Because I had so many expectations. Or because I'm so angry because it's not happening my way. Well, nothing can dull that feeling. Nothing can get me high above it. Well, changing my hair color, changing my shorts, shopping doesn't do it. Nothing does it for me anymore, let me tell you, because I've tried it all. So when I do it, it's because I want to do something, not because I'm doing it to forget about something. I want to do things because I want to do them. So I want to tell you. And the biggest things in the life of a human being aren't accomplished by forcing them. They're done because people want them to do them. They want to do them. If you're in a relationship and you feel like you're being pushed and you're stuck there and you don't want to be there, you've got no business there. If you're in the program and it's a strain because you're so obsessed and you're so full of reserves, go get stoned. It's not your place here yet. That's my opinion anyways. When it starts really hurting me, it's not God's will. Making efforts is not the same thing as forcing. And today what I can tell you about God's will is that when I know it's my will, and when I feel it, it's God's will. And today, I feel it, that God's will is for me to give you the message I sent you today. Thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your convention. I love you all.